Okay.
Here we come again.
So far, so pod, so what?
The.
Yeah, okay. Greg is busy laughing, so I'll do the tagline then. The transatlantic eclectic.
The transatlantic state-of-the-art speed metal podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's just it. That's it. Yeah. And yeah, here we come again.
Here I come again.
Yeah. Okay. We are in the same session as last time you heard us, and we are on Killing Is My Business. We've flipped it to the B-side. And what's the start?
Rattlehead.
Well, here I come. Here I come again. Stand up.
Very heavy metal riff.
Oh, yeah. This is the classic ode to the headbangers. This is a song about loving metal and not needing chicks, which is really cool when you're younger, but I feel like when you get older, you're like, well, maybe we can have the chicks, you know, maybe we can have the, like maybe let's let girls at the show, you know?
Yeah. Well, he wants to create that kind of spirit, you know, that kind
of course.
Team spirit, you know, that kind of...
Yeah. This is Chris Poland. Little harmony overdub there.
Best part of the song, I would say.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is cool too. Big band swing, I guess.
Oh, big time.
You could imagine a brass section.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did give them something unique to hang their hat on as far as their sound. I mean, it really did have something very, very special about this lineup. You know, a lot of it, it's because of Gar, you know?
And now it's power metal again.
Well, also, the other bands, they were coming from a metal, a solely metal perspective, and at most, a metal and maybe punk perspective. Mm. Megadeth was coming from a metal perspective, a punk perspective, and then they had that jazz thing. I mean, that really gave them an edge, you know?
It's kind of a stupid song. Well, I like it, you know? It's not very smart.
Well, it's not supposed to be brain surgery, at least lyrically not, you know? It's just supposed to be... This is their whiplash, you know? The timpanis that warranted credits are about to arrive as well, too.
Orchestral drumming, yeah.
I think right at the end of the drum roll. I think that's where the timpanis are.
Rattle your goddamn head.
Okay, I didn't even hear any timpani there.
No, but I think if you really pay attention to it, you can maybe hear it, but it's like... Can I prove that there's timpanis? No, but they said it in the credits, so it's like, I don't know, I guess I'll take their word for it. Yeah.
Where's the goddamn flute on Born Again? Tony Iommi has flute credits. There's no flute on that record.
I've never heard flute. Oh my god.
Skin flute, perhaps. I don't know. I have no clue, Greg.
Oh my god.
And the timpani is also, to me, like, is lost on me. I don't know.
It sounds cool. I mean, to say that, I mean, I can respect the fact that they were trying to be different. I mean, I seem to remember if you really, really, really hone in on the end of that song, you might be able to hear the timpani. But I think if you really hone in on it, you could probably hear it. But like, I guess,
yeah. Bach intro and then the timpani is clearly, I mean, I like this actually, but I'm just going to say Dave is clearly trying to put himself amongst the greats of musicians.
Listen, I can relate to that. I can understand that. And I can respect that. But you know,
I also think he's great.
Yeah, I'll never take that away.
This is a bit pretentious, adding timpani, opening with Bach. But
of course it is.
You know what the hell? I'm a bit pretentious too. I like pretension. It's closely related to ambition. It's close to that.
Of course it is.
What is the difference between pretension and ambition? What would you say?
Reality.
Yeah.
I think that there's ambition that is just so skewed beyond the scope of reality.
Yeah.
Maybe that's psychosis, but I think that like the ambition of getting yourself something measurable that's above you currently, but it's reachable, that to me is ambition.
Yeah.
Like, are you like, if you tell me, you know, someday I want to be president of the United States, well, Johnny, I hate to tell you, it's probably never going to happen. They have rules.
It's still we, the people, right? <That's>
right? You know, that's ambition, but it's also,
you
like,
know, Greg, I'm just not your kind.
Yeah, I know. It's not.
I go to court when I have to.
It's not plausible. That's a goal you can have, but it's just not. Legally, that just would never ever happen. You know, so it's like, it's ambition. But if you say, "Hey, I'm going to put out, I don't know, a record next year," that's ambition. Like, that's something that's ambition, measurable. Yeah. That's something that's chartable. That's something that you can actually. It's out of reach now, but it's something you can grasp. You know?
But what if I up the ante? Like, I'm gonna put out a record next year, and it's gonna be as much of a record as Power Slave. Then you're kind of reaching a bit. Then, but is it really pretentious? I think it's just over ambitious, maybe.
But that's the thing, though. I think I would say that's more plausible than you being president in the United States.
For sure. I mean, imagine that birth certificate. You know, the hunt for my birth certificate is not going to work. It's in Kista in Sweden, you know. It's like, I cannot be the president of the United States of America.
No, that would not work. But that's, you know, like that. But that's when you say, oh, I'm gonna make a record.
But you could. You could.
I mean, I wouldn't want to.
No.
I wouldn't fucking want to. Not a chance.
That'd be really bad for our podcast. I wouldn't. As well.
No. And also, like, they find so much shit on me within, like, the first week of me. They just go through like this records I put out and be like, well, clearly we can't have this possessed lunatic.
I always pinned you as a pretty straight,
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's
a pretty straight, nice guy.
I appreciate that because I think there's still a large portion of my country that still does not understand or grasp, you know, the kind of music that we like. And I think that they take very much verbatim and literally, you know, a lot of the more fantastical things that are on the kind of music and records that we enjoy, that they would probably say, well, clearly this person's a fucking whatever.
Insane, a lunatic.
Yeah, exactly. Which obviously people like you know better, you know, but there's a lot of people in my country in America who fucking don't know better, that are still just, you know, they just don't understand it.
We don't have that problem. On my Swedish side, that you know, the relative, I guess the, what do you call that? The family, the extended family, I think is the English phrase, right? When you meet up, when there's uncles, there's grandmothers, the extended family, I guess. We call it släkt in Swedish, but within that, you know, everyone gets the heavy metal thing.
Yeah.
And they are quite old school. They happen to be more old school than, you know, the average Swede. They're very much like, you know, openly Christian and all that. And they completely accept it, you know. They pick up Killers, and it's like, oh, this is some terrible shit here. go ahead, you know, keep right. listening to it. You know, they right. look at it, it's like, oh, this is some fucking demon. They're not going to say fucking. They're obviously right. going to use, you know, there's some hecka demons here. And, but, you know, it's with love. And my, yeah. one of my uncles, he went with my cousin that got me into Maiden. He went with him for the first couple of shows because he was young. He was 11.
That's cool.
And he went with him and he came back and it was like, yeah, they're really good. You know, they play well and they seem super nice.
Yeah.
They're not enticing violence or whatnot. You know, they're not bad guys, basically.
I don't know. Obviously, I can't say for Sweden, but I don't know how deeply ingrained or rooted or hold Christianity or Catholicism has on your country as opposed to mine. But
Catholicism, we're Protestants, right? We're Protestants, basically. Right,
yeah.
But,
so,
but there's a, you know, there's a few problems there too, and I'm quite neutral when it comes to that. You know, I'm definitely not anti-religion at all, but mm-hmm. I'm anti organizations to a point. You know,
yeah.
even big companies. You know, even a big private company starts mm-hmm. getting dirty. When you get a lot yeah. of money and we get a lot yeah. of people involved. So we mm-hmm. can keep it at that because that's a full episode otherwise. But I would yeah, say right. nothing here is more accepted.
Yes.
Probably more accepted here. And I've heard the same from Tom, another mention of our network then, mm-hmm. From Metal Gods, Judas Priest podcast, that you've also been on.
Yeah.
And he mentioned several times that, you know, it's sort of a weirdo thing still in the States, which feels foreign to me because here it's quite mainstream, you know, it's not at all provoking to listen to metal.
Still very much a subculture, you know, very much.
Yeah.
But I think that also makes it more, I think that's why maybe we cling on to it so tightly over here, because it is a subculture.
Yeah.
You do have to kind of maybe dig through the weeds to find your crew mm-hmm. and to find your people, you know? And so I think that's why maybe we hold on to it so tightly over here, why it means so much to us. Cause you know, it's not really, there is still people out there that don't get it in our.
Yeah. But we do that musically. Musically, it's still fringe. It's still yeah. subculture for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it comes and goes, you know,
right.
we have like, let's call it Top of the Pops. It was actually right. called Vox Pop when I was a kid. And as soon as there was a big new metal song, be it Metallica, be it Maiden or whatever, it would be number one until it was out. You know, 3 weeks right. was maximum. So, right. you know, yeah, we like our metal. But I would say, like, culturally, it's very accepted, but it's very much put in, like, these are nerds.
Right.
You know, which I'm fully comfortable with, you know. I don't mind that.
I don't care.
But it's not, like, it's not scary. It's not violent. It's not...
It's like anything else. There's a bad apple in every bunch, and the 1% or 0.5% that is ill-intended is going to ruin it for mm-hmm. the other 99%, because people inherently will focus on the negative. Well, the outsiders yeah, for sure. will inherently focus on the negative. Like, you'll never ever, like, to the casual person, you say Norwegian black metal, and they're just going to think of people burning churches and yeah. people killing the fucking people in their own band. Yeah, you know, like
the same thing with something completely on the other side of the spectrum. You say Islam, you instantly think, okay,
exactly.
terrorists. You know, it's not
that's,
about that.
That's
it's
probably a
religion,
much better
it's
example.
About peace.
But yeah,
it's about being like a rabbit. You know, that's the idea of the religion, is to be a mm-hmm. rabbit, to be normal, to be like part of the. It's quite hippie, really. But you know,
yeah.
of course, everything gets a name. Everything gets famous or infamous in that regard. Mm-hmm. But a last point on that topic is that I think it's a long time for us here since anyone saw any bad apples in metal. You see them in hip-hop for sure, the gangster
right, yeah.
stuff, you know. Maybe you see them in techno because there's a lot of drugs in that scene. But heavy metal in Sweden today, and this is what I want to compare to you since you're on the other side of the pond, is extremely tame, culturally tame. Like, no one is scared of a metalhead ever in Sweden since at least 30 years, you know.
Really?
Yeah, but in the 80s, maybe it was still scary.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. For sure.
And I hear your family's waking up too.
I got one of them down here. He'll probably run back upstairs though.
When was last a metalhead like a scary figure, like an enemy of society in the States?
Probably Marilyn Manson. So we're probably talking 25 years ago.
All right, yeah.
You know, but I mean, metal, you know, but like it. To society, it's really all the same, you know. I'd say to pop culture, to mainstream society, it's all the same, you know. So that was probably the last one.
I actually have a, I have two records, Marilyn Manson records. Well, they never really made it to my Hall of Fame.
Right.
Okay. There's 12 minutes left of the record. You think we can pull it through?
Yeah. Next song is Chosen Ones, correct?
Chosen Ones. Yeah. I read something about that song.
Different kind of song. It's about Monty Python. It's about the killer rabbit from Monty Python's Holy Grail. Yeah. Very, very unique subject matter. I think that's kind of special.
Yeah.
Very interesting. It's almost got like a punkier kind of feel. It's got like a little boppier kind of. Also another song with a great bass fill in it, you know.
Okay. So let's kick it off then.
Yeah.
And good morning to the Di Pasquale Jr.
Yeah, it's just the boys up right now.
Yeah, nice riff. I like this drive.
Yeah.
Kind of tight cymbal work to I think it's even closing the hi-hat, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Nico McBrain style. I like that. Makes it more clear. Sam Wilson, great drummer.
Very great. Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice fill. The drums stand out to me in this song.
This is also another song that I feel like has aged really well.
This sounds also like Megadeth years to come, to me.
Mm-hmm. You can hear flashes of it.
Sort of black metal or Tom G. Warrior, Celtic Frost.
A little bit.
Percussive. Well, that was a good one, Greg. A good ooh.
Yeah.
Is this a trade-off situation?
I don't think it is. I think this is all Dave. You can tell because it's so how high-pitched it is and how screechy and just attacking it is.
Yep, you're right again. It's an odd cadence. I like it.
Here comes the awesome bass run.
All of that was super eccentric.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Double bass kicks in here.
Again, very Motorheady.
Yeah.
Filthy Animal.
Yeah.
Wow.
Deceptive cadence.
An extra tail at the end of the ritardando as well. Yeah, that's just the whole song, the word that came to my mind was eccentric.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sort of eccentric.
It's written by a guy that
lives alone, and he lives in a, what's that thing about, you know, at the coast? Fyr, we call that. Lighthouse. There's a guy that lives in a lighthouse,
okay.
And he wrote this on his own. It's like, yeah, I'm going to add another end to it. And it's like, it's very eccentric. Not like that strong musically, but cool.
I think it's very cool. I think it's a song that's aged better. You know, it wasn't a song that maybe went to a lot when I was younger, but I feel like it's something that has aged pretty well, especially when you grasp the nuance of the... The word I keep going back to is this, the songsmanship of it, the twists and the turns that I didn't really have an appreciation for that when I was younger, you know, and it, with age, I think it's something that's that's become infinitely cooler and has made the songs that much easier to enjoy.
Probably one of the most hidden tracks on this record.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have noticed it, basically, when I was younger.
I don't know that they played it in 40 years or however long it's been. I don't know that they played it after this tour, for all I know. I've never seen a set list ever with this on it, you know? I think it would be a great live song.
It could be awarded deep cut of the record, I would say.
I would give it that. Yeah, I would give it that.
Are you feeling any stress of your family being up? It doesn't disturb me.
No, I think we're good. I think as long as we got about, what, 10 minutes left of the record?
Two songs, I think.
Two songs? Yeah. I think we got, I got about that, at least that much rope left.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it takes time. I was, well, you know, you told me like we could do this album in one go. I was still thinking, it could take more time. I don't know.
We'll see. Well, we're still figuring it out. We're still working through it. And it's episode one, so it's cool. You know,
it's episode one.
Yeah, so it's good.
Or actually episode two, probably at this point, or episode 1.2. Who cares?
Well, that's right, yes.
Next song is
Looking Down the Cross. Yeah.
Oh yeah. This one, I have to say, even before hitting it, was my biggest surprise. Looking back at this record, preparing for this episode, and I think this is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah,
here we go. Looking Down the Cross.
I think that this song is really, if there was one song on the record that could maybe hint of how great they could be, this might be it.
Yeah. Sinister intro. Sinister, right?
Very sinister. It's a pretty epic song, but it's not incredibly long, right? Like, what's the runtime of this song? It can't be more than 5 minutes, right?
Four or 5 minutes. Let's see here. It's 5 minutes.
Oh, it's 5 minutes? Okay, so that's definitely the longest song on the record. So
it is the epic. Yeah. This is cool too. Almost like a picky sound, almost like you add a bit of harmonics just by, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. But this song, this song is easily his best.
That's nice.
Easily his best lyrical performance on the record. The lyrics are very well written.
Okay, we have to give them a little bit of time after then.
Yeah. I may have also stolen a line from this song for lyrics in one of my own bands, too.
Oh, okay. Which band?
Sepulphile.
Oh, yeah. The death metal band.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is it. This is my favorite part of this record.
Yeah.
It sounds so Megadeth to me. Like, there's no doubt this is the best part of the record. Yeah. To me. Love it.
Yeah.
And then this too, the syncopation.
Uh-huh. And then the nice little break right here with the little lead thing.
Yeah. This rivals anything on any of the records. To me.
Mm-hmm.
That.
The whole song builds. The whole song is a build-up, basically.
Yeah.
Looking down the cross, bleeding from the crown. That's such a great line.
I think it's inspired by, you know, the execution of Jesus Christ, I think.
Yeah, it's about the crucifixion. Absolutely. Malice of Corona Zone. I mean, he's on some great lyric stuff here.
It's a lot of inspiration musically in this song.
Crushing the bones of the hundredfolds. Like, I learned words from this song when I was a kid.
Yeah.
In in this part, there's one really harsh, just overdub, just him just trem picking one note. It always sounds super epic to me.
Also quite calm groove here, you know, just relaxed, but still metal.
Yeah, and actually a very hooky chorus here as well too.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Greg, best song on the album.
Yep.
Doesn't resolve even.
As far as the scope and what they were going for, and just they nailed it. Nailed it.
Kind of a symphonic structure.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite bit there, it didn't even reoccur. I was kind of hoping for it to reoccur all the way through, even preparing for this episode, because I'll give you a listener that I wasn't familiar with this track before, you know, mm-hmm. deciding to do a Megadeth podcast, you know, I have to step up to the plate, I guess.
You want to talk about deep cuts? This is definitely one of them.
Now it's my favorite track of this record, mm-hmm. next to the title track, that would be.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Do you agree with me? This is a pretty strong track, and I think it tells the most where Megadeth are about to go in terms of the, you know, just the harmonics of it.
Well, here's the thing. I think if I had to say, if I had to pick my favorite song on this record, I'm going with the title track. But I would say that...
Yeah, good choice,
it's,
though.
It's a 1A, 1B type thing, because looking down the cross, it really gives a hint of what they were capable of, but also in the same respect, they never did a song like Looking Down the Cross ever again. So it's almost like it's a glimpse of the future, and then they immediately left a song like that behind. I can't think of any other song they ever have. Maybe the closest thing would be something like In My Darkest Hour, but obviously that's a way different vibe, totally different thing. But as far as like just being epic and grandiose in that era, I mean, it's kind of cut of that cloth, although they didn't really do anything that ever sounded like that ever again. But I think that, again, a song like that was really escaping the other band's first albums. You know, there was a depth there that they had.
You can't find that on Kill 'Em All. You can't find that on Show No Mercy.
Nope.
Not at all.
Nope. And again, the lyrics, he nailed them. So far,
so what? So what? There's one song left.
The controversy.
Yeah, fucking Mechanics. Still makes me a bit pissed. I'm a bit angry when I listen to this song. I don't like it.
It's a very catty move to throw this on the record. It was obvious, you know, I mean...
He even said himself, right? He wanted to set the guys in Metallica straight. They said that he couldn't play. I'm going to show them I can play, and I can play at 25 BPM plus. You know, what the hell? That's childish as...
Yeah. I will say that, you know, I said then, I'll say now, I'll probably say it forever. I think the Four Horsemen is a better version of this song.
It's so much fucking better.
It just is, you know, because it's on... Because the Four Horsemen is on Kill 'Em All for the right reasons.
Yeah.
You know, and Mechanics is on there for, I mean, honestly, it fits the aesthetic of what he was trying to portray, which was, I'm out for blood. I'm somebody, you know, I'm somebody too. You know, it's a, like very WASP ideology, you know?
Yeah, like I'm a gas station clerk and I'm having sex.
Right. I mean, the lyrics are
at work. Yeah, it's terrible fucking lyrics. I hate these lyrics.
Of course, they follow something as great as "Once Looking Down the Cross" by I almost said "Once Upon a Cross." That's a totally different podcast.
D-side.
That's the Aside podcast. But like, yeah, but you know, Looking Down the Cross. Of course, you follow lyrics that good with just dumb double entendre, sexual innuendo lyrics involving car parts. You know, it's almost kind of like it's almost like a sequel to I'm in Love with My Car by Queen, where, yeah, you know, they have kind of double entendres with the parts of the vehicle as well.
Yeah, too. Highway like, Star, you know.
Yeah, same Star thing. About
that
but, too. Like,
but this is just worse. This is not good, you know, to me anyway. Like, I have a problem with this song.
I think the story behind it is more interesting than their version of the song.
Oh, and I love the Four Horsemen. Sorry, Megadeth fans, big Megadeth fans. You finally have your first podcast coming in here, and I'm just like, I don't like this. I much prefer the Metallica version.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that one.
I'm still one of you guys. I'm one of you guys. Yeah, give me the time of the day, and you'll see. You'll see. Yeah. You know, he's the second best riff writer in this world to me.
Yeah.
Tony Iommi is the best. So, yeah. Throwing in my respect there before disrespecting this final track of the album. Here we go.
All right.
Also, this intro is stupid to me, but I don't think it really is. It's just like my teenage self is coming like, this is stupid. I don't want this.
I mean, I get why he did it, to kind of maybe separate a little bit. It's all right. You know, I mean, again,
it's actually pretty good, but, you know, right. I'm just going back to 13 again. It's like, this is stupid. I don't want this.
Yeah. You know, it's the last song on the record. It's the song that everyone was waiting to hear.
I mean, this riff this fast, it's ridiculous.
It doesn't really work for me like this.
This fast.
It's got no, can't even, it's got hear no it. Groove. It's got no groove to it, you know? It. Yeah, exactly. He just wanted to...
Same goes for this riff. Come on, you know?
Yeah. This is just on here because he wanted to show he could play it faster than Metallica.
The vocals are okay. I'll give it that.
Yeah, but the lyrics are stupid, you know? I mean, it's funny.
It's just too fast.
I don't hate it, but I would... 10 times out of 10, I'll choose Four Horsemen over Mechanics.
The guy with the smallest dick in the city pulling up in a porch. That's what it sounds like, you know?
Yeah.
Micro penis in a porch.
I don't know if they would have put that on the album sleeve back then.
I'll give it the fact that, I mean, of course I heard the Four Horsemen before, you know.
I think everyone did.
And of course they wrote it.
Yeah.
He has all the right to do this.
I just think that if he maybe with hindsight, I would hope he would maybe, if he had it over again, maybe he wouldn't have done this. Because like this guaranteed that he was going to have interviewers goading him for the rest of his life. Again, it's just on the record, just so he could show he could play it faster than them. That's it. That's how I always took it. Yeah. You know?
Such a stupid reason to do it.
But you know, I can understand it. I can, you know, if you're really that hurt and that out for blood, then you're going to do whatever you can to kind of get that out of you, you know? But
the most redeeming fact is that Samuelson is playing pretty well here.
Absolutely.
Doing some things that Lars still cannot do, you know? And I love Lars, but yeah, no, he's limited.
Lars cannot do this. I am close.
So, okay, at this point, I'm almost on board with this tempo. Now it sounds okay.
Yeah, but it's also almost over.
Exactly.
If it's a 4-minute song, it shouldn't take you 3 minutes and 30 seconds to feel it, you know?
Now, this is cool, though. Good solo.
Mm-hmm. Solo's awesome. That's the best part of the song, I think.
Oh shit, there's only 6 seconds left. How are they gonna end this? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's over.
It's over. And thus we have Killing Is My Business and Business Is Good.
What's your lowdown? I'm surprised. I'm not gonna do this elongated lowdown here. I'm just gonna say I'm surprised on how good this actually was.
It's a record that I've enjoyed more with age, just basically as a whole. I've enjoyed it more with age. I don't think it's the best representation of the band, obviously.
I mean, very rarely the debut is.
Yeah. It's just a hint of what was about to come.
It is.
Yeah. And obviously you gotta start somewhere. I think that the album really gets by on its attitude and its reason for existence, which is basically just revenge. And who can't get into that vibe to some degree, you know, to understand that, you know, like if you know the story, it makes perfect sense. But, you know, some songs are definitely better than others. I would say there's probably 3 or 4 standout songs on this record that you could say that I think should still be in the set to this day. I think the title track should still be in the set to this day. Yeah, I would, if it was up to me, if I had my say, I would have the title track still in the set. I would still have Skull Beneath the Skin. Yeah, I would probably say Rattlehead too. I don't know if Looking Down the Cross would necessarily work so well live. I'm not really sure. It's a great song, but I don't know if it would really translate so well live.
It could be more of an album piece. Yeah,
more of an album piece. But I wouldn't, if I never heard them play The Mechanics again, I really wouldn't care. Yes, I don't need to hear The Mechanics ever again. If they played those 3 songs live still, I think that they would still fit very well.
They should do the title track. Yeah. Which is the riff of the album? For you guys listening, what did you think about this type of run through? What should we do different? Because it's going to be a while until we record again. So you can have your chance at producing the show a little bit, if you will.
Yeah, let us know.
So far, so pod, so what? No symbols or anything. Those words in one word at gmail.com. Thanks to the, you know, the brothers. It's so far, no sisters, but thanks to the brothers in the Deep Dive Podcast Network. A good way to start for us.
Yeah.
And, that's about it.
That's about it.
Do we have a sign-off for this?
I guess we could say hindsight is always 2020, but looking back is still a bit fuzzy. Catch you next time.
It's still a bit fuzzy. And stay an inch or two out of kicking distance. Awesome.
Excellent.
That was cool. I'm going to stop the recording now.
All right, cool.